Chapter 4. As always, warnings for discussion of canonical death, suicidal thoughts, self-harm, and survivor guilt. Thor returned without a warning. No one else appeared to be surprised. Actually, Clint wasn't surprised either. The groups from Asgard had become more plentiful in the hallways, always escorted. Robed figures and massive warriors in gleaming armor, following in the wake of carefully chosen agents in crisp black suits. He hadn't spoken to any of them, had kept as far away as possible, but every so often he caught one looking in his direction, their eyes considering. He wondered if they could see something the humans couldn't, if there was something that drew their eye, some mark or trace left behind. He didn't like thinking about it. Which meant he couldn't stop thinking about it, or staring at his reflection in every mirror he passed, constantly, obsessively checking his eyes for traces of electric blue. Even now, as Steve shook his massive hand and Tony gave him a wave, Thor's eyes were on Clint. Clint resisted the urge, the ever-present urge, to ask him what he could see.
"Looks like we're putting the band back together," Fury said, his voice just scraping the edge of sardonic. "Provided there are no objections."
It took an embarrassingly long time for Clint to realize that everyone, including Fury, was looking at him. He shrugged. That didn't appear to be the response Fury was looking for. "Well, Agent Barton, he in or not?"
"My transfer request to HR was denied," Clint said, holding his relaxed posture through careful effort. He shrugged.
"I don't make hiring decisions."
"You do about this one," Fury said. As if that made any sense at all. "Can you or can you not work with him?" This was bullshit. They all knew it was bullshit, because this wasn't up to Clint. Nothing was fucking up to Clint. If Fury wanted Thor, Fury was going to get him, and if Thor wanted on the team, well, that was even better. Nothing was in Clint's power to approve or deny, and yet here Fury was, making a damn show of the fact that it was. Making himself out to be the good guy. And in the process, making it Clint's fault if things didn't go the way he wanted them to. Clint's lips tightened, but he knew better than to just get up and leave. He didn't expect that he'd get far.
"Hey," Clint said, his voice flippant. "They're better off with you than me."
He turned his attention back to the window, but out of the corner of his eyes, he could still see the wary look that the others exchanged. Thor remained standing, his face set in stony lines.
"Agent Barton," Steve started, and Clint resisted the urge to throw something at someone.
"Look," he said, rolling his head in Thor's direction, "I got no quarrel with you. Not like you made out well on this deal, and as far as I can tell, you came down on the right side of the fight. You didn't fuck us over, and you could have. When the chips were down, you did your part."
Thor stared at him, and Clint could almost see him weighing his words for truth. Clint quirked a smile at him.
"My brother tried to kill me, too."
In the leaden silence that followed that, he turned back to the windows.
"It fucking sucks."
"Aye," Thor said, his voice heavy. "That it does."
Fury heaved an audible sigh.
"So if that's all set..."
He glanced around, and no one had anything to say.
"Take a seat, please. We've got information to go over."
Thor's feet thudded hard on the floor with each step. Clint wondered how a guy that big and that heavy could move as fast and as fluidly as he did. Being able to fly must help. But as he lowered himself into the seat next to Clint, Clint met his eyes. Thor gave him a small, almost invisible nod, and Clint returned it.
"Thank you," Thor said in an undertone, as Fury started talking about something no one in the room cared about. Probably Fury, most of all.
Clint gave him a faint shrug. For a moment, they were both silent. Then Thor said,
"How did you know?"
Clint watched Fury's fingers on the tabletop.
"That he was going to try to kill you?"
"Aye."
Thor's voice ached. It was soft and leaden and full of sadness.
"He had a couple of goals," Clint said.
He didn't look away from Fury. "That was one of them." Clint's fingers twitched against his thigh,
and he flattened them out, taking the tension from the muscles like he was unstringing a bow. He didn't make a secret of it. Stark was arguing something now, and his voice rose and fell with furies, a melody in two stubborn parts. Clint felt the weight of Thor's eyes on him and glanced in his direction. Thor looked drained, tired, his skin devoid of color, his eyes flat and empty. "He wouldn't bother keeping that a secret," he said at last. Clint watched Thor's hands flex on the arms of the chair, watched the metal strain beneath the grip. For some reason, it didn't invoke anything resembling fear in him. Instead, he looked back at Fury. "He knew you'd come," he said, not sure why he did it. "He was counting on it." Thor nodded. "To take his revenge." Clint paused. That voice. He tried not to think about that voice, that slithering, vibrating rage, the banked madness that infected every word. He hated to remember it. He hated it. Even now, the thought sent panic through him, making his pulse spike. Clint sucked in a breath, and it hissed between his teeth. He tried not to think of snakes, of flat green eyes with holes in the center. Tried not to think of poison dripping through his veins, the necrosis spreading from the inside out. "He wanted you to know what he'd done," Clint said, and Thor glanced in his direction. His eyes closed, dark blonde lashes heavy on his cheeks. He nodded. Clint leaned back, turning his attention, at least on the surface, back to what Fury was saying. "The military isn't happy about how any of this went down," Fury said, slumping low in his chair. "Which I'm sure you're all aware of." Stark let out a snort. "Yeah, but they weren't ecstatic about finding out you'd been building a little private military force behind their backs, especially not one with these particular soldiers." He waved a hand in Steve's direction, in Thor's. "Military brass generally doesn't like being outgunned." "You could help me with that if you wanted to," Fury said, his voice saccharine. "I'm out of the weapons business." Tony leaned a cheek on his fisted hand. "Any particular players?" There was a beat of pause, and Fury heaved a faint sigh. "Ross." Bruce's eyes slid shut, and Tony's eyes flicked up, sharpening with full attention now. "Can you hold him off?" "For now, yes." Fury tapped at the table, sharp and hard, a hammer falling in on the tip of one finger. "I'd recommend you remain with Stark for now, Banner." Bruce nodded, his shoulders hunching in. "Not my choice," he said with a tight smile. His fingers worried at the edge of his shirt cuff. "Not a good idea, either. I should..." "Tower's still getting repaired," Tony said, frowning. "But we've got better security than most. He's right. We need to keep you out of reach." "This isn't..." Natasha leaned forward. "It's safer for everyone," she said, her voice crisp. "You know that. Trying anything at Stark's place would be a media nightmare and hard to cover up. We could put you in a safe house, but..." "If he comes looking, people are going to get hurt," Fury concluded. "Not me, not him, but the agents and soldiers that get caught in this little power play of his." He tipped his head to the side. "Stay at Stark's." "If he's saying it, you know it's the right choice," Tony grinned. "Since he'll do anything possible to avoid saying those words." Thor shifted in his chair. "This is of concern to us?" he asked. "We made a lot of noise and a very big mess," Fury said, shaking his head. "Now the rats come out of the wreckage, and we are not dealing with that."
"He and I, well, he and the other guy..." Bruce paused, rubbed his forehead with tense fingers. "It's complicated."
"He used to date Ross's daughter. Then he threw some tanks around. Then Ross tried to build an army of giant green clones using his blood," Tony said. "Then sections of New York kind of took a hit."
Thor nodded. "'Tis complicated indeed."
Clint felt his lips twitch, but he kept his eyes on the window, tracking the slight movement of the clouds in the afternoon breezes. In his peripheral vision, he watched the team shift and talk, watched Stark's fingers fly over his phone's face, and Steve's face change with every emotion that crossed his mind. He watched Thor worry the strap of Mjolnir, tracing each of the leather workings, the metal,
and knew that sort of comfort of a familiar weapon close at hand, watched Natasha watch him. He didn't really pay attention to anything else, just let his brain track movement and intent, just watched, letting the voices fall into a pleasant background buzz of nothingness, until Fury stood. "We got any other business?" he asked, bracing his hands on the table. Steve leaned over. "Director, Agent Coulson." Fury held up a hand. "The situation with Agent Coulson," he said, glaring in Steve's direction, "is complicated. Until some final arrangements can be made, we are not moving forward with a memorial for him." The silence was painful. Clint didn't look. Barely breathed. Waited for it to end. Prayed for it to end. "Yeah, that'd be hard, wouldn't it?" Tony said. He flicked out with one hand, spinning his phone on the table, stopping it with the stab of a finger. "Burying Coulson." Fury glanced in his direction, his one eye narrowed. "Burying him is for his family to do, but the situation there is complicated by Agent Coulson standing with his family." Steve frowned. "Was he estranged? Are you unable to—" "That," Fury said, and the word was sharp. It cracked through the air. "Is not anything any—" His eye cut in Tony's direction. Stark didn't flinch. His own eyes narrowed into slits. "Any one of you has to be concerned with. Once we are satisfied with the legal side of things, S.H.I.E.L.D. will be having a memorial to honor all of our fallen, Agent Coulson included." Clint couldn't breathe, couldn't move. His eyes failed him, his gaze going blank as he stared, unseeing, at the sky outside the windows. He blinked, and it took effort. It took an act of will to lower his lids and raise them again, to clear his vision from tears that didn't exist. "It's not right," Steve said. And there was that stubbornness. There was the man, lost and found, who refused to give up. His jaw was out at an obstinate angle, his brows lowered. "He deserves more than he's going to get from this place," Tony said. Fury looked at him, and there was something in his expression that Clint wasn't familiar with, and that was disquieting. That was definitely not good. But Fury stood, uncoiling to his full height. "Ain't that the fucking truth?" he said with a tight smile. "When are we memorializing him?" Tony asked, his voice soft and... "When we can." Fury turned away from him. "If that's all, I've got other appointments today. Have a good day, Avengers." Without another word, another look, he simply walked out. In the silence he left in his wake, the others exchanged a glance. Tony stared after him for an instant, then set his sunglasses back on his nose and bent his head over his phone, a muscle in his jaw jumping. Steve sighed, a faint exhale. "Do we have a problem here, Stark?" Tony didn't even look up from his phone, his eyes invisible behind the lenses of his sunglasses. "Oh, that is a loaded question, Captain, my Captain. There are so many problems here that I do not have any idea where to start." "Why don't you start by sharing with the rest of the class?" Clint asked, propping one boot on the edge of the table. For a split second, Tony's fingers stilled, but his head never came up, and he never shifted his posture. "No thanks." His brows dipped, and he flipped a hand in their direction. "Talk amongst yourselves." Steve leaned forward, his brow creased. "If you have something to say..." "I do, and I'm not saying it. The moment I know anything, you'll be the first to know. But right now, I just suspect things." He stood up, fast enough to knock his chair aside. "I am full of suspicions, and the good director and I have one hell of a past. So as soon as I know anything..." He gave Steve a tight-lipped smile. "I will pencil you right in on that memo. Are we done here? Good? Good." Without giving anyone a chance to say another word, he stalked out of the room. Caught off guard, it took Bruce a second to follow him, giving them a nervous smile. Steve was on his feet, glaring in Stark's wake, and Natasha stood. "Leave it," she said, her voice soft. He turned a glare on her, his expression oddly hurt. "How can I leave it? He deserves to be..." Natasha moved so fast that Steve didn't even see her coming. Leave it, she said, and her voice never rose, her tone never changed. But she stared up at him, her eyes narrowed, her mouth tight.
To his credit, Steve stood his ground.
Agent Romanoff.
They can't, Clint said, climbing to his feet.
Nat looked away, and Steve met his eyes. Clint didn't flinch.
They can't bury him. I promised him that if he died, I would be at his funeral. That of the three of us, if one fell, the other two would... He shrugged. Stand as an honor guard.
And now you won't? Steve asked, frowning.
No. That's my final duty. The last one I haven't discharged, Clint said. His lips quirked up. If they bury him, well, they've got nothing else to hold me with.
He spun his chair back into place.
They can't bury him. They're using him as leverage against me.
There was a beat of silence.
For you, Natasha said at last. Hard to tell the difference, Clint said with a faint shrug. I don't care enough to split that hair.
You could, if you wanted. She met his eyes, and hers were shadowed, empty. You've got the aim.
But not the desire. Shoving his hands in his pockets, he headed for the door.
Halfway there, Steve's voice stopped him. Was he your friend? Clint glanced back, a vicious reply on his tongue. But Steve's face was open, his eyes direct.
Clint shrugged. Yeah?
Then that's a hell of a way to repay him. Clint took a breath.
Fuck you!
Steve braced his hands on the table, his fingers spread, his palms steady. His voice was quiet, almost gentle, when he spoke. You don't put that on him. That's not his legacy. His legacy is that he fought, and he fought damn hard, and he went down fighting for all of us, to give the rest of us a chance.
Do you think it matters at all to me why or how he died? Clint asked. He's dead. Who gives a fuck about anything else?
His nails were digging into the skin of his palms, and he realized, with a start, that his hands were in fists.
Who cares?
Steve straightened up. You do. Clint opened his mouth, and he could taste the words on his tongue, thick and hot and biting like bile. And before he could give any of them voice, he met Steve's eyes, and they all died unsaid. And he didn't want to look into Steve's eyes anymore. Turning on his heel, he stalked out of the room and tried to tell himself, with every step he put between them, that he hadn't seen the same empty, resigned, stalwart look in Phil's eyes. Some days, he just couldn't sit still. It wasn't like he could outrun it, any of it, but he could stop thinking about it. He could beat himself down until he ached, until the very act of breathing hurt, until every inhale went to nothing more than keeping his heart beating, until he didn't have the breath for thinking, for remembering. He could run himself into brain death. Getting his bow back was better, though. Getting his bow back. His bow. The bow he'd carried for too many fights, too many falls, feeling the comforting, familiar lines of the grip and the weight of it. That was the best thing he could imagine. He'd managed not to let out a war whoop when one of them had been passed to him, and it was a very close thing, that. To have his bow. His bow. That was all he needed. Having the space to run with it, that was even better. S.H.I.E.L.D. maintained a variety of training areas, and most of the time he kept to the range, where he could just take shot after shot, where he could reinforce the muscle memory that allowed him to shoot straight and true, over and over and over. No mistakes, no hesitation, no thought behind it. Find the target, draw the arrow, hit the damn target. His job wasn't particularly difficult, really. But when he needed a workout, when he didn't want to think, when he wanted to burn himself down to the bone, when he wanted to make certain that his aim wouldn't fail him in the field, he booked time in one of the training courses. There were a couple of them, varying terrain and difficulty, laid out so that agents could be trained or drilled for different situations. Clint liked this one, a natural setting, a tangled mass of brush and rocks, of high cliff-like arrangements and hidden hollows. He liked running and jumping and firing on the fly, keeping his brain busy with the shot and his descent at once. And he liked climbing, pushing himself up the sheer rock walls, liked using just his hands, his legs dangling beneath him, and his boy strapped across his back. And he liked shooting until his arms shook with the effort, until his vision was gray at the edges, until he was dizzy with it, with shock and strain and pure exhaustion, until his thinking narrowed down to keeping himself on his damn feet. When he couldn't shoot anymore, he ran. When he couldn't run anymore, he climbed. And when his fingers slipped free halfway up the wall, he wasn't sure he didn't care. It was pure instinct that had him grabbing for purchase, snagging whatever handhold he could get. It was enough, but barely, and his body slammed into the wall. For an instant, he just hung there, his breathing labored, his arms shaking with the effort he was expending to hold on. He glanced down and winced. It was a long way down to the ground, and that was going to hurt like hell. "Hold on, Hawkeye." He jolted, but his instinct was always to hold on, instead of letting go. Always. He clung until his fingers gave out. But he glanced back over his shoulder, hoping that he hadn't heard what he thought he'd heard. But it was Steve Rogers sprinting in his direction. No, not Steve Rogers. It was Captain America, in full costume, down to the bright boots. Behind him, keeping up somehow, Tony Stark was right on his heels. "I'm fine," Clint gritted out, and no one listened to him. No one ever listened to him. Rogers bounced, fast and hard, leaping from one rock to another, moving up, faster and faster, hitting the cliff at a force that should have hurt, but he was climbing as soon as he managed to get his fingers on the rough face. It took him only a moment or two, and he was drawing even with Clint. One hand reached out and snagged Clint on the back of the belt, taking the weight off of his hands. It was humiliating, and he was used to that, but he knew better than to let his pride get in the way of his health. Well, at least in front of witnesses. He needed to keep his bows, and that meant keeping himself in one piece, no matter how it stung. As Steve took the pressure off of his hands, Clint boosted himself up, getting his feet into a stable position. Steve waited until he was capable of supporting himself, and then his hand fell away. "Ready?" he said, and Clint nodded. Together, side by side, they climbed down. Steve stayed within reach, his movements easy and assured. His gaze never left Clint, not until they were both safely on the ground. Clint staggered, his legs not wanting to bear his weight, and Tony grabbed him by the shoulders, lowering him down to a nearby flat rock. "Hey, hey," he said. "No falling over now." "Thanks," he said, and it was grudging. After a couple of seconds of sucking in breath, he felt stable enough to glance in Steve's direction. "You've got a hell of a response time." Steve flexed his hands at his sides, his bright gloves less cartoonish than they should have been. "So do you." He smiled, and almost against his will, Clint returned it. "You hurt?" Clint shook his head. "Just lost my grip for a second." He stretched, keeping his body limber, and tried to ignore the look that Steve and Tony exchanged over his head. "You book the range?" Clint said, trying to distract them. He sucked in slow, careful breaths, bringing his pulse back under control. His muscles burned with a strain, and he flexed his shoulders, stretching out his arms before they could begin to spasm. "I like a challenge," Steve said with a faint smile. "And I'm just here to run some tests on dear old dad's design," Stark said, hooking a thumb at Steve's shield. "For some reason, he won't let me do..." "I'm not letting you take it, no," Steve said. Judging by the long-suffering look on his face, they'd had this argument a few times. Judging by the pout on Stark's, he hadn't been winning it. Clint arched an eyebrow. "Yeah?" He crouched down, his fingers tracing the lines of his bow. "It's some special material, isn't it?" Steve shrugged his arm, slipping the shield down so he gripped the strap in his palm. "Vibranium." He held it out. Caught off guard, Clint took it. "Wait, he gets it, but I don't?" Stark said, crossing his arms. "He's not going to try to melt it," Steve said. Clint set his bow down, not that he needed both hands to hold the thing. Despite its size, it was remarkably light, the surface perfectly shaped beneath the sensitive pads of his fingers. He tilted it, rubbing his thumb along the edge, frowning.
"This is...
odd," Roger said with a smile.
"Better used in something that isn't a battering ram for a guy in a spangly blue suit," Stark said.
And Steve rolled his eyes, his smile never faltering.
"Perfect."
Clint closed his eyes, tracing the lines. He leaned in, his ear almost next to the shield, as he ran the nail of his index finger against the edge of it. Holding it up, he flicked his knuckles against it.
"Huh, I've never seen anything like this."
"It is one of a kind," Steve said.
"No, it's..."
Clint frowned. He gave it a slight toss in the air, catching it with both hands.
"I don't understand."
"You can throw it if you want," Steve said. Behind him, Stark was wearing an expression of betrayal that bordered on the farcical. For that reason alone, Clint was almost tempted.
"No, thanks. I don't..."
He shook his head.
"I can't learn it that way."
He glanced up and around, picking a target.
"Do me a favor? You see that?"
He pointed at an outcropping of rock.
"Can you hit that?"
He held out the shield, and Steve took it back.
"Sure."
Steve flipped the shield between his palms.
"Then what?"
Clint scooped up his bow.
"Then what?"
Steve's lips quirked up. "Where should it go from there?" Clint closed his eyes, thinking.
"Back to you."
"Okay," Steve nodded. "It's going to be a ricochet, though. Outcropping, then there," he pointed. "There, and back to my hand." Clint nodded. His fingers rattled against the grip of his bow.
"Do it?"
He'd seen it here and there in the one fight they'd shared, and in the shield security footage from when Steve had first started pulling himself together. But now he focused. No one shooting at him. No Phil making appreciative noises behind him. It was the first time he could really watch. Rogers swung, a flick of his arm that had weight behind it. It had power, a lot of it. Fast and hard, the shield flew and hit dead center. Clint had only an instant to be impressed, and then Rogers was plucking the shield out of midair. The whole thing had happened exactly the way he'd said it would, and Clint shoved down on an annoying feeling of approval. His thumb flicked against the triggering mechanism for the quiver that was built into his bow.
"Nice," he said. "Can you do it one more time?"
With a little nod, Rogers stepped through, and the shield followed the exact same flight pattern, as precise as if it was scripted. He had the control. When the shield was back in his hand, Clint reached back, drawing a single arrow free of the quiver.
"One more time," he said, setting the arrow against the bowstring. "On my mark."
Rogers nodded, not questioning it. Clint drew, smooth and controlled, letting his body follow the force of what was to come.
Mark.
Shield flew, arrow flew, and the two met in midair, the arrow slamming into the surface of the shield, ricocheting fast and hard and out of control. The shield dropped back into Steve's hand, and the arrow clattered uselessly to the floor. Clint's eyes narrowed as he considered the path. Reaching back, he pulled another arrow free and set it on the string. He drew, and Rogers was getting into place even as Clint said,
"Mark."
There was something about how the force was being absorbed. The second arrow hit the wall with a thud, but not where he wanted it to land. Cursing under his breath, he set his jaw.
"Mark."
The arrow skimmed the top of the shield, using the natural rotation instead of losing its force. It spiraled out, hard and fast, and impacted, dead on an outcropping directly to Clint's left, an impossible angle from where he was standing. He grinned up at the arrow.
"Gotcha, you bastard!"
There was a beat of silence, and then Stark spoke.
"Have you been tested for the mutant gene?"
Steve's head snapped in his direction, the shield back on his arm.
"Jesus, Stark!"
Tony glanced at him over the lenses of his sunglasses. Let me guess. S.H.I.E.L.D. gave you a list of things that are highly impolite to ask in modern society, and you took it to heart. His cheeks flushing, Steve jerked back. He looked oddly hurt by that. Yes, and that was on there. And that was on the top of the list. That was on the top of the list. You can't just...
Clint gave a snort of laughter. Yes, he can. And yes, I have.
He crossed the range, heading back to a spot where he could do his weapons check.
I'm not even a carrier.
He shrugged. I'm also not an experimental subject, the last member of a dying alien race, or possessing of any arcane amulets. Wiggling his eyebrows, he gave Tony a snarky grin. Just human. Sorry. Tony's face was unreadable. You're running an enormous amount of calculations in your head, on the fly, without any prep. He paced in Clint's wake. Air resistance, force, material stress, angles, speed. You're positioning your target, you're calculating your own movement, and everyone else's. I'm really good at guesstimation, Clint said, flipping his case up on a flat slab. Bullshit, Tony said. Behind him, Steve was standing, his face curious. Tony hooked a thumb in his direction. He's got the serum, giving him a boost for trajectory, force, angles. I've got Jarvis running my numbers. You're doing it alone. Not that big of a deal. You seem to think that I'm running calculus problems in my head. I'm not. Clint broke down his bow, his fingers going through the familiar steps without slowing. I know how things go. I know how these things go. I don't have a supercomputer for a brain. I have a lot of practice under my belt. He snapped his case shut. Range is yours, Cap. Tony stepped in front of him. Practice doesn't do this. All the practice in the world doesn't give people this kind of... Listen, Stark, I'm dumb as a bag of bricks. Just check my file. Clint gave him a thin-lipped smile. I'm muscle and a good pair of eyes, and that's it. Scrape the surface, and you'll just find more of the same, so... He patted Tony on the shoulder. Don't look to me for any deep thought. You're gonna be disappointed. Tony's hand snapped out, catching his arm. I've read your file. It's got a lot of disparaging words in it. Dumb isn't one of them. I'll keep that in mind. Clint stared him down, keeping his face blank. I've got places to be, so if you don't mind... For an instant, Tony's fingers tightened, and Clint's fingers went white-knuckled on the handle of his case. Before either of them could move, Steve was reaching between them. That's enough, he said, his voice soft but firm. Back off, Stark. There was a beat of pause, and then Tony's hand fell away. What are you hiding, Barton? Clint headed for the door. You calling, Stark? Because you know... He glanced back, his face open and unconcerned. Tony's eyes narrowed anyway. That means you've got to show your hand, too. If I do, Tony said, his teeth flashing, it'll be because I'm sure it's a winning one. Of that, Clint had no doubt. He triggered the door and stepped out. I'm just saying, the paddle ball would make less of a mess.
There is no mess. There's nothing... I'm dealing with my own trash, Clint pointed out.
He shifted forward, one booted foot giving him the leverage he needed to boost himself up. One hand holding onto the back of the couch, he raised the other and flicked his wrist. The projectile whipped across the room, skipped over the back of a chair, bounced off the wall, and floated down to land right in the center of the trash can. Clint pulled another card from the stack. A joker. His lips twitched, and he bent the thin paperboard, scoring the edge. Hopping down, he paced around the edges of the room. Besides, the paddle ball has Iron Man on it. Why did you think that was a good idea?
He has a really impressive merchandising arm to his business, Dr. O'Brien said, tapping her pen against her lips. Her lipstick was a pale glaze of pink today. It was nice, like the faint blush of a peach.
I thought you might appreciate it.
Why? Clint asked, vaulting over the coffee table, throwing cards with one hand, then the other, as he came down on the other side, boots light on the floor.
You've talked about Mr. Stark before.
I've also talked about Zoe Saldana before, and you didn't get me anything with her face on it,
he said. He glared down at the paddle ball, an atrocious thing of metallic plastic, and a little ball that flashed blue when it bounced.
Really? Did you really think I'd use that?
You talk about Mr. Stark more than the others, with the exception of Agent Romanov, Dr. O'Brien said.
Clint made a face. Well, Natasha is my jailer at the moment. Thor and his Asgardian pals can go to hell, and I barely know anything about Rogers or Banner. At least Stark is interesting.
Her pen jumped on the page. Clint wondered which of his lies she'd chosen to document, or if she was just recording them in order. Why is he interesting?
About 30 different magazines in the last 6 months would agree that he's interesting enough to toss on the cover. Why don't you ask one of them?
I don't get paid to talk to them, O'Brien pointed out. She had reading glasses on her nose today. Small ones, with thin silver frames. He wondered if she usually had contacts, or if she only wore them when her eyes were tired, or if they were just for show.
Why are you thinking about Tony Stark? I'm not, he said, and he cracked open a new pack of cards, dropping the cellophane into the trash can. He hopped backwards and tossed a card there as well.
If he's interesting, then you are.
She paused, and her eyes closed, a dip of her lashes that held, shielding her eyes from him. When they rose again, she smiled.
What is Tony Stark's bird?
Tony Stark, he said, after a moment of consideration, is a killdeer.
Dr. O'Brien didn't look up, or try to hide her smile as it stretched wide and warm.
Tell me about killdeers. Look it up for yourself. You'll never learn if you expect me to do all of your information gathering for you.
Clint flicked a card through the lampshade, banking it off the bulb and into the trash. According to your file, you excel at it. O'Brien didn't flinch as a card skimmed her shoulder.
Shield agent. It's in the job description.
But some are better at it than others. There is a difference, after all, between seeing and comprehending. She looked up, her eyes calm. Tell me what you comprehend about Tony Stark.
Why?
Because a Peregrine Falcon would seem to be a more logical choice, she said, leaning her elbow on the arm of her chair and propping her chin on it. The golden line of her pen dipped low over the paper, still for an instant.
Only if you're not paying attention.
Clint tossed three cards in a row, using the second to flip the first, and the third to flip the second. All three cascaded into the trash can.
Killdeer are little birds, well camouflaged. They nest on the ground, and if they get low, if they curl in tight, you can walk right past them, because they are ballsy little things. They will hold their ground almost until it's too late. But if a predator finds their nest, the killdeer, especially the males, do the strangest thing. They fake an injury. Her head tipped to the side.
Excuse me? She asked, her lips curling up. Clint pointed a card at her.
They fake a broken wing. How does a bird fake anything? It's an elaborate ruse, and it's so carefully constructed.
He shifted, his balance shifting, as he bent a card between two fingers. Basically, when a predator gets too close to the nest, the killdeer will flail around in the dirt. It's a brilliant act. They kick up dust, stagger, drag one wing behind them. The predator knows the nest isn't going anywhere, and the instinct is to catch and kill the easy lunch, then come back for the eggs. So the predator will follow, and the killdeer, it does this thing, flailing and flopping around, hopping, giving all the visible signs of panic, keeping the predator's attention on it, and all the while, it's leading the threat away. He looped a hand in an easy circle, then flipped the card. It banked off the desk and fluttered into the trash can. In circles, skipping just out of reach, staying close enough to keep the predator interested, to keep it thinking about how easy this all is. But in the end, he bent a card between his thumb and forefinger and held it bridged there. In the end, when the predator lunges, the killdeer just takes off. And by then, the predator is so turned around, so frustrated, that it stands almost no chance of finding the nest again. The paperboard flexed in his grip. The killdeer uses itself as bait to protect its nest.
And how does this relate to Mr. Stark?
Because he makes an elaborate show of his weaknesses, of his flaws, of his eccentricities. He shoves them in your face. He distracts and diffuses, and underneath all of that, Clint flicked the deck of cards wide with the thumb of his other hand. He's hiding something. Something very important. Something that he will protect at all costs.
And what's that?
Clint grinned. Damned if I know. With a twist of his wrist, he sent the cards spiraling through the air, his fingers flicking like wings over their surfaces. Whatever it is, though, it's important. And he'll twist you in knots if he thinks you're getting anywhere close. But if you make the mistake of thinking he's vulnerable... The last card floated in a lazy arc into the trash can. You're going to leave with an empty belly. O'Brien studied the trash can. So, not a falcon?
Too obvious, Clint said, and too one-dimensional.
He kicked back. And before you can ask, I'm still not on a team.
Why not?
She was writing again, and the smooth, easy loops of her pen were somehow calming, as if she wasn't in any way concerned about anything he had to say. Didn't they invite you? Her eyebrows arched. Children can be so cruel.
Are you allowed to be snarky with me?
It's a survival instinct, Agent Barton. I'm allowed to make it out of this room alive every day. It's in my contract. Her pen didn't slow, didn't pause, smooth and even, and never, ever hurried. He listened to the faint, even sound, matching his breathing to it without conscious thought. How is your team? He gave up.
Batshit insane.
Do you feel they're alone in that?
They take the usual shield impulse towards crazy to an entirely new level. He snorted.
New and exciting level. I don't want to talk about them.
All right. Are you sure he's not a falcon? Because the thing is, I like falcons, she mused.
Let go of the concept. I need you to let it go. You're trying to second-guess me, and that's not going to happen. I'm not going to change my mind just because you're trying to anticipate...
He stopped dead. She was smiling, just a little.
I don't have a team.
Dr. O'Brien nodded. I'll ask again tomorrow.
You know the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different response, right?
The pen was placed down on the end table with a faint and final click.
And this may come as a shock to you, Agent Barton, but the DSM-4 makes the case that the diagnosis of, quote, insanity, unquote, is significantly more complicated than that.
Clint nodded.
Good starting point, though, right?
She smiled. There are certainly worse places to start.
I'll try harder next time.
For an instant, he thought a bomb had gone off. The whole building seemed to shake, the floor rattling beneath his feet hard enough to knock him off balance, knock him to his knees. He fell braced, his hands out, his whole body hunched low. People grabbed for walls, stumbled for doorways, holding onto anything they could, huddling against the support of the building itself, even as it vibrated. It stopped almost as quickly as it had begun, leaving a silence so total that Clint could hear the faint rustle of papers floating to the ground. Mary, from Legal, was clutching an empty folder to her chest, her shoulders back against the wall, her knees shaking as her paperwork fell like snowflakes around her practical heels. For an instant, there was just the sound of breathing, a few sounds of confusion, and then the alarms kicked in. Clint was on his feet and moving, grabbing arms and dragging people back to their feet, one and two at a time.
Move, he snapped. Fire stairs, evac rules. Go, go.
One man was trying to pick up a scattered pile of folders, and Clint grabbed him by the shoulder.
Leave it, he said. Go.
The offices were emptying fast. SHIELD personnel were trained and drilled for this, and as people came spilling out into the hall, Clint ran back, pounding a fist on each door as he passed. He spotted O'Brien coming in his direction and breathed a sigh of relief.
The floor wardens are handling it, she called, her arm around a confused-looking young woman. Go!
Clint took off running.
His phone vibrated against his hip, and he fished it out. "What happened?"
There was a single beat of silence. "Minor explosion in the lab," Natasha said. "Wouldn't have been a problem, but..."
"But?" Clint asked, bypassing the main stairs. "Too many people, and he knew the access tunnels better than anyone outside of the maintenance staff."
"Banner," she said, and Clint cursed.
"Yes," she agreed.
"How bad?"
"Fury's evacuating the building," she said, her voice biting. "How bad do you think it is? Get down here." He didn't bother to reply. He just saved his breath for running. It took him a matter of minutes to get down to the emergency level, the building's battle bridge of sorts. A nerve center of monitors and emergency personnel, agents dodging in all directions as they organized the evacuation and put fail-safe plans into place. It was Hill who cut through the swarms, barking out orders, keeping people moving, darting from emergency to emergency. She caught Clint's eye and pointed, the flick of her arm as good as an order. Fury and Steve were locked in some discussion that he couldn't hear from here, but the body language was clear. They weren't on the same page right now. Natasha fell into step with Clint, her face pale and tight. "Thor's out of touch, and we don't trust any of the other Asgardians," she said quietly. Clint nodded. He wouldn't trust them either.
"Stark?" he asked, even though that was useless. The Iron Man armor was a technological marvel, but it wouldn't hold up. Not if the Hulk was on a rampage. Natasha tipped her chin towards a corner. Stark was snarling at a member of the medical staff, blood at his hairline and beneath his nose. He was struggling up, trying to get up, and Steve caught his shoulder, pinning him down without ever taking his attention off of Fury.
"He was down there," Natasha said. "Caught the edge of the blast. One of the agents got him out, mostly because he was unconscious at the time."
"Footage?" Clint asked, and she pointed to a nearby monitor. Clint watched as she pulled up the image, her body solid and warm and familiar at his side. "It happened fast, and there's no way it could have been avoided. An accident, plain and simple." Even on the silent security footage, he saw the machine buck, then buckle, shattering with a force that shook the video feed. Banner, a scant 10 feet away, went down hard, and as the video went fuzzy, so did he. Even as the image clarified, he was disappearing, people scrambling up and out of the way, in a barely controlled evacuation. The level guards were on the scene fast, far faster than Clint had anticipated them moving, and he saw the flash of metal as the rifles came up. Things got worse from there.
"What are they firing?" Clint asked as the guards emptied round after round at the Hulk.
Flinching, he let his eyes flicker over the images.
"Trank rounds?"
"A mix," she said, her mouth tight. "They weren't armed for it when it happened. But they got in enough pure hits. The Hulk should be down by now." On the monitor, he watched people scream and scramble out of the way, watched the weapons snap with recoil, watched the Hulk howl and lunge, all muscle and menace, until he crashed into the nearest wall, shaking the whole frame. When they finally fled, when the bomb blast containment doors started to shut, the Hulk didn't move to follow them, didn't attack, didn't do anything.
"He should be. He's not."
Clint adjusted the image, pulling up the live security footage. "For now," Natasha said, her voice pitched low, "he's contained, the level shielded and sealed."
And underground. Clint's eyes darted between the various camera angles, mentally running through the building schematics in his head.
"He's not trying to get out. When he does, he will."
For now, Hulk just seemed confused, visibly tense, jumpy. His head swung around, his body moving in jerky, erratic motions. Huge fists clipped the wall, scraped the floor, and he pounded on contamination doors before heading down the hallway. Every so often, he snarled up at the security cameras, eyes sharp and dark.
"He's just looking around. We'll know if he tries to get out." He took a deep breath.
"We'll feel it if he decides he's getting out."
She didn't deny it. "Fury's busy with Stark and Rogers, but he's going to make a decision soon." Clint stared at the monitors, his eyes narrowed.
"They're sending in sweeper teams."
Yeah. Natasha stayed at his elbow, her arms crossed, her face blank. They'll gas the floor first.
It's not going to work, he said, leaning a hand against the deck.
She was silent, and he glanced at her.
Will it?
No, she said. Clint turned on his heel. Behind him, she called his name, and he didn't listen, didn't care. He was running full out. People scattered in front of him, scrambling and running and dodging out of his way, and if there was any attempt to actually stop him, Clint didn't notice it. Most of the staff had cleared the building already, and he knew the path well. In a matter of minutes, he entered the range weapons room at a dead run.
"Fromm!" he yelled. "I need my bow!"
Agent Fromm gaped at him, but it didn't last long. The weapons master had known him for too long to be put off by much.
"Get your ass out of here," he yelled, pointing at the door. "You are not cleared for emergency combat, Barton, and do not try telling me otherwise."
"Give me my bow and an arrow," Clint said.
"Fromm, I know you want to help, but you..."
"He's going to kill someone, Fromm." Clint leaned in, grabbing him by the front of his shirt, yanking hard. "He is going to kill someone, or someone is going to kill him. Give me my fucking bow." Fromm stared him down.
"He's going to kill you," he said, his voice calm.
"Barton."
"He won't." Clint took a deep breath. "I know what I'm doing. Please, I don't want anyone else to die."
A faint vibration went through the floor, and both of them flinched.
"I hope you know what you're doing," Fromm said, but he was heading for the weapons lockers. "I really hope you do."
"Yeah, me too." Clint pulled the trankload from the gun's dart, weighing it in his palm.
Thank God everything that R&D develops is modular.
The faint thump of the weapons case on the counter brought his head back up.
"Not that one," he said.
Fromm glanced down.
"Why not?"
"Because I'm not going to kill anyone, and that... here." He tossed the trankload to Fromm, who caught it and tossed him the passkey. In the weapons locker, Clint retrieved the correct case.
"Grab me an arrow."
"How many?" Fromm asked, already moving.
"One." Clint took a deep breath as he did a swift check of the bow. "That's all I'm going to have time for."
"Take a regular quiver." Clint shook his head.
"No point. It'll just be in the way."
He took the arrow from Fromm, and a moment later, he was slapping the trankload into place. He gave it a quick spin between his fingers, feeling the weight and how it moved, feeling the shift, the liquid load, the way it swung in the cradle of his palm. He nodded, a quick little dip of his chin.
"Thanks, Fromm."
He gave the older agent a quick smirk.
"Want me to knock you out so you don't get in? You take a swing at me, Barton, and you will regret it."
Fromm flipped a bulletproof vest onto the counter.
"Suit up."
Clint shook his head.
"No, it's a uniform, and it's not going to help me anyway.
Not if I've misread this." He snapped off a quick salute.
"We who are about to die salute you."
"That's not funny," Fromm yelled after him as he sprinted out the door. The thing about a building like this was that there was always a way through any obstacle. There were that many redundancies, that many escape routes, and that many secret paths, that there was no way that all of them could be covered at once. And Clint had spent the majority of his time with S.H.I.E.L.D. slipping through the air vents and the maintenance tunnels, disappearing every chance he got. He knew his way through the bowels of the building, even on the lowest levels, even with the safety protocols in place. The comm unit in his ear chirped, and he cupped a palm over it.
"Nat?" he whispered.
There was a second of silence, then she whispered back,
"Where are you?"
"En route to our problem. Do me a favor. Don't let Hill flood the level with gas, because the dose they've got planned for him will kill me."
"You can't get access to that floor, Clint. It's sealed."
Clint watched as the little device went through its paces. There was a flash of green light and the sound of a bolt sliding back. He snagged it, tucking it back into his pocket before he wrenched the door open, just far enough to slip inside.
"Yeah, okay."
He ducked through, and the door slid back into place with a final-sounding thud. She swore.
"You're in!"
He swung his bow off of his back. I'm in. The single arrow swung against his hip like a pendulum, slow and even, keeping time with his silent steps.
Where?
His lips curled up. Northeast corner, where no one's looking right now. He passed the camera and waved.
Keep them back. You have to give me this chance, Nat. I only need 5 minutes. If you think I'm going to tell you where he is.
Clint set his feet on the ground, feeling for the vibration. I think I can find him without you, he said.
Nat, don't let them flood the place. Not yet.
Without waiting for a reply, he killed the comm line and took off, as fast as he could without running. It didn't take him long to find what he was looking for. He turned a corner into a wide, long hall, and just like that, he was no longer alone. The Hulk was terrifying in closed quarters. He was hunched forward, shoulders a sharp arc, massive fists hovering just above the ground, head down. Muscles jumped, thick and heavy, beneath his green skin, and his breath came in shuddering gusts. He was still, or as still as something that big and that alive could be. He shifted, the movement slow and sustained, feet crunching against the shattered floor. Clint choked down on his survival instinct, on the part of his brain that desperately, fiercely wanted to live, and kept walking. It was a struggle. It was an actual fight to move closer, to force his legs to move, inch by painful inch, towards the sheer mass of the Hulk. He wasn't harboring any illusions about the situation. There was no way the Hulk didn't know he was there. The only question was, did he care? One more step, one step too far, and the huge head swung in his direction. Clint stilled. The eyes that pinned him were alien and familiar, all at once, and he could see Banner now, in the features, in the slope of the jaw and the angle of the brow, in the hair, so strangely altered. But there was something, someone there, that he knew. Hopefully, it was someone that knew him too. "We done?" he asked. He held his hands out to the sides, the single arrow held lightly in his palm. Hulk's eyes followed the movement, narrowing just a fraction, watching the easy arc of the arrow as Clint brought it up. He exhaled, long and sharp, a snort of disinterest. But he didn't look away.
"I think we're done," Clint continued. "We're all tired. No one here wants to hurt you. And you don't want to hurt anyone here." He paused. "Do you?"
Hulk shifted, shoulders coming up, thick and hard, to frame his face. His fingers flexed in front of him, a quick run of digits, before folding back into fists. But he didn't attack. He didn't turn away. He just studied Clint, eyes sharp beneath heavy brows. Clint held up the arrow in front of him at eye level.
"I will not hurt you," he said, "but I will make you sleep." Hulk drew back, drew up, a menace now, for an instant, but it was gone almost as quickly as it came. Clint didn't move.
"You're tired. Time to rest. You did what needed doing. You did what you had to do. You're done." He arched his eyebrows. "Aren't you?" There was no response other than the heavy push of his breathing. Clint brought his bow up, his movements slow and controlled. Like a student running a drill, each movement precise and ordered, he knocked the arrow and let the bow hang down in front of him.
"I'm Hawkeye," he said. "We've met, but hey, no time to exchange pleasantries."
Smooth and graceful, he brought the bow up.
"This bow has a name," he said with a faint smile. "This particular bow, it has a name. It has a purpose. Just like me."
He pulled the string back to its full draw and held it.
"How good are your ears? Can you hear that? The bowstring? Even when I'm still, it's not. The tension vibrates. It sings." His lips quirked up in a smile. "Are you tired? Will you sleep now? Will you let Bruce back out?"
Hulk stared at him for a long moment, mouth drawn down in a sharp frown. But he didn't move, didn't attack, didn't run.
"Remember that sound, okay? It's a lullaby. listen for me, for that song. When you're ready to sleep, listen for this song and know that you can rest. For another second, he held it, his arms aching with the tension, but the hook didn't move. He inhaled, pulled the bowstring back against the curve of his lips, a kiss goodbye, a kiss for good luck, and let the arrow fly. Everything happened so fast that he almost lost track of it. The arrow flew and found its mark, and he dropped his bow. No point in holding onto it anyway. One arrow, one shot, and he was out of ammunition. One shot, that was all he had, all he could take, and the bow clattered to the ground, the sound lost in the howl of the Hulk's roar. Then Bruce Banner was stumbling, falling, only momentum carrying him forward. And Clint caught him. His arms shaking, Clint latched on, held on tight. And Bruce's weight carried them both to the floor. Clint hit hard, his shoulder and his hip taking the blow. And he didn't care. He didn't care because Bruce was slumped, unconscious and still, in the cradle of his arms. In the silence that followed, he let his head fall back onto the floor with an audible thump. "Oh, thank fucking God," he said. And his hands were shaking as he reached for Bruce's throat. The pulse he found there was fast and faint, but it slowed, even as his fingers lingered. Clint's head fell forward, his forehead resting against Bruce's, and he held up a hand, giving the all-clear sign. It took mere seconds for him to hear the release of doors, the bang of metal on metal, and the pounding of footsteps, and Clint tensed. "Oh, come on, let's not start this over again," he muttered, but wherever the S.H.I.E.L.D. teams were, they held back. It was Iron Man who came around the corner, fast and hard, with repulsors roaring, and came to a skipping stop mere feet away. "Barton?" Clint nodded. "We're good," he said. "Pulse and respiration are slowing. He's stable." Tony flipped the visor of his helmet up, and Clint grinned up at him. "Hey," Clint said. "Little help here, Stark?" "You have balls like a fucking elephant, Barton," Tony said, and he was shaking his head, but he was grinning back. "Goddamn gigantic fucking balls." Clint stumbled to his feet, letting Tony take Bruce's weight from him. "You would know. It's an occupational hazard, I guess."